All right, Shabbos, say good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Ayin Beis 72. We are picking up on Ayin Aleph Amud Beis, the Tashma. Tashma. It's four lines up from the bottom. Our shir this month is sponsored by Paul and Kathy Pollack, in memory of Sol and Florat Pollack, Sarah Bas Avram, and Shmuel Bas Zechariah. May the neshamas have an aliyah and the families a nechama. So let's begin. So remember, we're still somewhat unresolved in the machlokas between Amemar and Ravashi about whether or not Meshicha is kona by an akum. Amemar says Meshicha is kona by an akum, and ultimately Ravashi says it is not. So we're still, again, we tried to prove the different opinions. In yesterday's daf. We've been unsuccessful so far, but we will try again today. So it says the Gemara, Amali Ravina Ravashi, Tashma, Dan Rabbi Chiyabar Ava Amra Biyochanan, Ben Noach, Ne'erag HaPachos Mishav HaPruta. A Ben Noach is killed for theft, even if he stole less than a Shav HaPruta. V'lo Nita Lehishavon. Rabbi will say, again, if he does steal less than a Shav HaPruta, ultimately, again, Lo Nita Lehishavon means he can't go ahead and give it back. Now, what's happening over here? If you look at Rashi, Rashi is actually on Ayin Beis Amud Aleph. So Rashi says, Lo nitan lihishavon, v'lo mechayiv lahadura lahayisra d'hamachil aleh. So Rashi, here's the interesting dynamic. On one hand, if I steal less than a shavar pruta from you, so the assumption is on less than a shavar pruta, people are mochel. Then nobody's makbid on less than a shavar pruta. Despite that, a ben noach is chayiv for theft. Remember, theft is one of the shavar mitzvos b'nei noach. And as we've already established before in Sanhedrin, all of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach are punishable by death. So by definition, a Ben Noach is killed ultimately again for theft of less than a Sheva Pruta. B'yat the Gemara says, "Lo nitan lehi shavon." But there's no way for him to go ahead and really fulfill returning it. Now we'll discuss what that means in just a moment. Says the Gemara, "V'i'amet Meshicha b'avikchom eino kona." Now, if you hold that Meshicha by an Ovid Kochavim is not kona, like Amemar does, Amemar holds that Meshicha is not kona, then am I ne'erag? Then why would the Akum ultimately be killed? At the end of the day, the Akum didn't really acquire anything, because if Meshicha is not kona, the Yisrael still owns it. To which the Gemara answers, "You're right, Mishum Detzari li Yisrael." Ultimately, again, the Akum is killed because of the tsar that he causes a Jew. He caused the Jew tsar, ultimately, again, through the theft, and therefore he's put to death for that. Top of Ayin Beis, Umaylo Nitan Lehishavon. What does it mean that I will say it's not given to return? De'eno Betoras Hishavon. What that means is that, technically speaking, there is no obligation of return in this situation, because since he is Yisrael, is ultimately mevater, he yields on less than a shavar pruta. There is no concept of a heishavas agazela. Ihachi, if that's the case, ema seif. I will say, look at the end of that brisa. Bachaveiro v'not lamimenu. If now, I will say, so here's the case. Ben Noach, number one, steals less than a shavar pruta from me. Then Ben Noach, number two, comes along and steals it from Ben Noach, number one. So I will say, what's the halacha? Ben Noach, number two, is killed for the theft from Ben Noach, number one. So Bishlam Reisha Mishum Detzari LiYisrael. So I understand in the Reisha of the Braisa, the reason why the first Ben Noach is killed is because he caused pain to a Jew. Ela Seifa my Ovid. But we'll say ultimately again, what's going on in the Seifa? Right? When Akum number one steals from Akum number two, ultimately again, why is there a death penalty for that? So the Gemara says, Ela Shmamina Meshicha Ba'ovei Kochavim Kona. Right? We'll say, you have to say that's what? Akum number two is killed because Akum number one, in fact, did acquire the lesson of Shavar Pruta. How did he acquire it? Meshicha. And from here you see that what? Meshicha is Kona. So Akum number one acquired it through Meshicha. When Akum number two steals it from Akum number one, that is a bona fide act of theft. And a Ben Noach is killed for a bona fide act of theft. So what I say, the Gemara seems to have successfully proven that halacha lemaisa, Meshicha is Kona by an Akum. Good. Hahu gabra domli lechabres. Well, listen to this case. There was a man who said to his friend, "I mizabnina la laha ara lecham mizabnina la." I have a parcel of land, and I'm not selling it now. But if and when I do decide to sell it, I'm going to sell it to you. Okay. So what happens? Azal zabna li ish achrinus. We'll say some amount of time goes by, whatever amount of time. And what happens? I decide to sell the land, but I sell it to someone else. I have this conversation with Reuven. I say, Reuven, I'm going to go ahead and sell you the land when I decide to sell it. And what it turns out, but later on when I decide to sell, I end up selling it to Shimon. So I say, obviously Reuven is going to be a bit upset. So what happens? I'm Rav Yosef, kana kama. Rav Yosef says, my sale to Shimon is void. Rather, again, I am bound in my sale to Reuven. So Rav Yosef says that, again, I am bound to Reuven, since I promised Reuven that when I sell it, I'm going to go ahead and give it to him. So therefore, halacha lemaisa, I'm bound to him. So the Gemara says, one second, I'm really Abaye, v'halo pasak, but one second, how could I be bound to Reuven? We did never even agreed on a price. As well, so remember, again, all I said to Reuven was, listen, one day when I go ahead and if I sell this field, I'm going to sell it to you. But there was no discussion about price. We didn't agree on terms or anything like that. Look at Rashi. V'halo pasak, I will say it's Rashi. It is Rashi in the short lines, four lines down. V'halo pasak, Rishon damim, v'lo samcha daiti akinyon. So we'll say again, how could I be bound to sell it to Reuven when we never established price? We're never makabel kinyan, just even on the agreement. So the Gemara says, "Umina teimra to chalhecha de la pasek lo kana." Are you telling me that wherever, again, there is not an agreement on price, so a purchaser can't acquire the object? After all, Gemara says, "Umina teimra." And from where do we know that if you haven't established price, then ultimately, again, the purchaser cannot acquire the object? This none. We learned it in our Mishnah. Hamocher yeno la'ovid kochavim. If I'm selling my wine to an akum, we'll say this is our Mishnah. Pasuk achlo madad damav mutarin. So we'll say if we agreed on a price, and then the akum measured out the wine, so the proceeds of the sale are permitted. What's the logic there? Because essentially, once we agree on the price, then what? It's as if the transaction has been completed, and now just simply that's money that the akum owes me. When the akum goes out and then touches the wine, that's not my wine that is becoming yayin esech. Rather, what? That's his wine that's becoming yayin esech. Madad atshalo pasak. But ultimately, again, if the akum measured out the wine first before we agreed upon the price, then what? Damav asurin. The money, they will say the proceeds are going to be asur. Why? Because essentially it became yayim akum while it is still in my possession. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, the money is going to, the proceeds are asur. So we'll say, what do you see from here? So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? You see from here that lemaisa, transaction cannot be considered complete unless, of course, the purchase price has been agreed upon. So the Gemara says, my havi halah. So the Gemara says, so what's the bottom line resolution? Kid de Kamino. What do you mean, what happened? What's the bottom line resolution? We just proved it from the Mishnah, that a transaction could only be considered complete, ultimately, again, when the price is agreed upon. We'll say, so you think to yourself, isn't that obvious that a transaction could only be complete based on when there is an agreement in the price? So we'll say, it could very well be that the Havamina is, that I might have thought that, look, if we're doing a business transaction, there are marketplace values, right? So if I'm going ahead and I'm purchasing a barrel of wine from someone, there's a going rate. So we agree that whatever the going rate is what I'm going to pay. That's the Havamina. Yeah. So I agree to go ahead and say to Reuven, listen, I'm not selling my field now, but when I sell it, I'm going to sell it to you. Then when I sell it, I sell it to Shimon. So again, there's a Havamina to say that what? That Lamaisa, maybe it belongs to Reuven, because I promised to sell it to Reuven, and the agreement was, whatever the fair value of the piece of land is what I'm going to sell it to you. Kamash Mala, no. That in the absence of an agreed upon price, a transaction can never be binding. So the Gemara says, So Gemara says, no. The reason why we have to prove this from another source and just not from Yayin Esach is because I might have thought that maybe Yayin Esach is different. Rabbi says, we've seen over and over again. So Yayin Esach has its own unique set of chumras. So I might have thought that this halacha, that you require a setting of the price in order to avoid Yayin Esach situations, maybe is a chumra by Yayin Esach, but maybe it doesn't apply in other cases. Kamashman Rabba, Sekashman, that in all cases, in order for a transaction to be binding, there must be an agreed upon purchase price. Tashma, Damrav Idi Baravin, Uvda Hava Be Rav Chista, Rav Chista Be Rafuna. So let's listen to this. Rav Idi Baravin said, there was a case that came up in Rav Chista's base medrash. They couldn't resolve it there. Rav Chista took it to Rav Huna's base medrash. Upash Temeha. And I will say they solved it from the following Mishnah. I will say the same type of case of where somebody agreed to sell someone something, they then ended up selling it to someone else. There was never an agreed upon purchase price with the first individual. So they dealt with this case and they resolved it from the following. Mashach Chamarov Upolov. This is actually an interesting case. Let's say again, I am purchasing something from Reuven. So Reuven is transporting product to me on the back of his donkeys or on his workers. I pull the donkeys or the workers into my home. V'chnisan l'soch beso, bein pasak ad shelo madad, u bein madad ad shelo pasak lo kana. We'll say whether Reuven and I agreed on the purchase price before I measured out the product, or whether I measured out the product before a purchase price, lo kana. We'll say, I did not acquire the wares. Why not? And therefore, as a result, both of us have the ability to renege. We'll say, so the idea over here is because the act of pulling a donkey, a laden donkey, into my home is halachically insignificant. Right? In order to go ahead and acquire movable property, either I have to actually pay money or I have to lift up the product. I have to move it in some way. But just to pull the donkey into my rishus does not do anything. However, pirkan v'chnis l'soch peso. But if I unload the wares from the donkey, from the back of the worker, and I bring them into my home, then, we'll say, first wide line, ayin beza medalif, then pasak ad shelo madad, then I will say, if we agreed upon the price, even if I did not yet measure out the product, shnehen, ein shnei yichon lachzor bahen, neither of us could renege on the transaction, madad ad shelo pasak, but if I measured out the product, and we did not yet set a purchase price, Shnehen yicholen lachzor ben. I will say both of them have the ability to renege on the transaction. So I will say, again, same theme. What do you see from here? That Lamaisa, no transaction is binding until the point where there is an agreed upon price. See, even if I'm doing hagbah, I'm doing mishicha, I'm bringing it into my rishus, if there is not an agreed upon price, either of the parties involved in the transaction have the ability to renege. Good. Ho gavre zomrei v'chavrei. I will say there was a man who said to his friend, Now watch this. This is actually a different kind of case. So remember, this is a takeoff of the first case. Same type of situation. I say to Reuven, listen, I'm not selling my property right now. But if and when I do decide to sell my property, I will sell it to you for 100 zuz. So we'll say, as opposed to the previous case where there was no articulation of a purchase price, here there is an articulation of a purchase price. We'll say what ends up happening. I end up selling it to Shimon for 120 zuz. I promised Reuven I was going to sell it to him for 100 zuz. I sold it to Shimon for 120 zuz. So we'll say, so what's the shaila? The shaila is, who is the owner of the property? Rav Kahana said, ultimately again, the first purchaser ultimately acquires it. Now, we'll say, if you look at Rashi, Rashi says, Daha pasak vakanu mine. So, we'll say, the case over here, according to Rashi, is two things. Number one, that when I first made this promise to Reuven, we did Kabbalah's Kinyan. So, we'll say, so we did some type of Kinyan to make the promise binding, and furthermore, what? There was an articulation and an agreement on purchase price. I said to Reuven, I'll sell it to you for 100 zuz. So, you know, I subsequently sell it to Shimon for 120. Rav Kahana says, Reuven acquires it. So ultimately, Rav Yaakov of Nar Pekod says the following. Hi, Zuzi Ansuhu. The truth is, we'll say, this case is different. Literally, again, it's a financial onus. But what does it mean, it's a financial onus? Look at Rashi. Zuzi Ansuhu. Listen to this. Really, so Rav Yaakov Narpiko says as follows. Why did I sell? Because at the end of the day, I got an offer I can't refuse. So meaning I will say, it's not that I wanted to sell. Set usually, everybody has a price at some point in time. So what I always said to Reuven is, Reuven, listen, in the time that I sell, I'm going to sell to you for 100 zuz because that's the fair value of the land. Shimon sweeps into town and what happens? He offers me something much bigger. So Rav Yaakov Napiko says, Zuzi Ansu, You see, Rav Yaakov Avakod says, my agreement to Reuven was, in the event that I sell under normative circumstances, I'm going to sell it to you for 100 zuz. Rav Yaakov of Nar Pakor essentially says, this is non-normative circumstances. This is not a regular case. He's offering me too much money to refuse, and therefore, again, I have every right to accept it. V'hilchasa, Rabbi Sehu does that locha falo, k'Rav Yaakov min Nar Pakor. I will say in this case, halacha follows Rabbi Yaakov of Nar Pakod, that what? That halacha lemaisa, I have the right to go ahead and accept the higher offer, and therefore go ahead and sell it to Shimon for 120 zuz. But see, if you look at Rashi just a moment, Rashi says, Zuzi ansu, ze, shenasalameva esum ansalamachra. The one who offered me, Shimon, who offered me 120 zuz, I will say literally, ansalamachra means, it's like extenuating circumstances. I had to sell. If I wouldn't have gotten an offer, I had no choice. If I didn't get such a high offer, I would not have sold right now. The way business transactions work is that they're based on some type of normative smichas das, some type of normative mindset. So when I say to Reuven, listen, when I sell and I sell you for 100 zuz, what I'm saying is, Reuven, all things being equal, at the end of the day, if and when I sell, I'll sell you 200 zuz. I'll say, but everyone understands that inherent in that transaction, if somebody rolls in and offers me something bigger, I'll say, like there's even, you see this even like in real estate law today, right? Ultimately, again, you could put in a contract, right? And I think the contract could even be accepted, but there's a certain point in time, still, even after a contract is accepted, I think, right? Is that correct? That you could still accept a higher offer. No? Okay. Fine. Good. Good. I'm sorry? Well, there is. There's a Kabbalah's king, meaning that there's an understanding that under normative circumstances, this is how we operate. But if it's non-normative circumstances, if there's some type of outlier circumstance here, I'm not bound by this. So essentially, what Yaakov Narpakot says like this, that Halacha Lemaisa, Reuven, I'm agreeing to sell to you under normal circumstances, but should something, some aberration from the norm occur, I'm not bound by this agreement. I will say ultimately again, this is how the halacha follows. So listen to this. So the halacha is as follows. So let's say again, I'm going to go ahead, Kirashi, listen to this. I'm going to go ahead and sell a property to Reuven. And I sell, and that's, you could plug this into any case you want. But I say to Reuven, I agree to sell you the property, and I want it to be evaluated, appraised, that's the better word. I want it to be appraised, ultimately, again, bitlasa, by three. So the shayla is, what does that mean? So, afilu tre migot lasa. So we'll say ultimately again, so that means I don't need a consensus of all three, but as long as the majority of the three ultimately go ahead and say a particular price, that'll be the price for the transaction. I will say now, the chiddush over here is, I'm using the lashon of shuma. Shuma means evaluation. Shuma is usually the lashon used by a beis din. How does a beis din operate? A beis din operates with majorities. So because you use lashon of shuma, I'm saying again, as long as two out of the three agree on a price, that'll be the price we'll go forward with. Kida amri betlasa, if I say to Reuven, I'm going to sell you the property for the amount that three appraisers say, that three people say, then what does that mean? Adami betlasa. Then I will say I'm only bound by the price when all three agree on that price. Kiddush shami barba. What happens if I say, Reuven, say the property as evaluated by four people, as appraised by four. So I'll say, here's the problem. Four is not a beis din. So once I'm saying the number four, what am I saying? Adami barba. But say ultimately, again, what that means is that I'm only going to be bound by the price if all four people, all four appraisers agree on the price. The kol shekin heichal d'amalei kida amri barba. But say all the more so if I say, as four people say. Amalei kida shayim bitlasa. So let's listen to this. If Reuven and I agree, that ultimately, again, we're going to appraise the land based on the opinion of three. So what happens? Va'asu tlasa v'shamua. Three people come along and appraise it. For amalei idach leisu tlasa achrini dekim lutfei. So say, so watch this. I'm going to sell Reuven a piece of land. So what happens? We say, we're going to go with the opinion of three. Okay, so like we said before, We need all three to agree. What happens? I'm dragging my feet a little bit. So Reuven gets his own appraisers, right? He hires three. So what happens? They come back with the price. I'm not happy with the price. I say, I want to hire my own three, right? Or I want to hire another three. So I say, so what's the halacha? I say to Reuven, I want to get another three who I think are more experienced. I'm Rav Papa. Dinahu Dima'akiv. Rav Papa says, I have a right to go ahead and ultimately say I want another three. And I will say now, the I in this case is buyer or the seller. So I will say, see, either buyer or seller have the right essentially again to call in another opinion. Maskil Rafuna Braid Rav Yoshua, Mimai Dahani Kimutfe, Dhamahani Kimutfe. So we'll say, Rafuna Braid Rav Yoshua says, I don't understand why you should be allowed to do that. Who says the second three no better than the first three? And therefore, and the Allah has Rav Yoshua both saying that as long as the first set of three who were called in are considered to be credible appraisers, neither one of the parties could call in a second appraisal. Now, both saying, now obviously, if Reuven calls in the appraisers and I say, Reuven, these guys, they just got their appraisal certificate online. They don't know what they're talking about. Right? So, okay, so inachinami, then I can call in a second appraiser. But assuming that the first set of appraisals are perfectly credible, I have no right to order a second appraisal. Good, says the Mishnah. Not us, Mishnah. So we'll say back to Yai Nesech a little bit. Natal es ha-mishpach. Umadad l'soch tzluchiso shal v'kochavim. V'chazar umadad l'soch tzluchiso shal yisrael. So listen to this interesting case. Same case, I am selling wine ultimately again to an akum. How am I measuring out the wine? So let's say I take from my barrel or from my flask and I take a funnel, that's a mishpach, is a funnel. I take a funnel and I pour it into the vessel of the akum. So we'll say, so what happens? So then I take that same funnel and I pour my own wine, right? Or I pour wine for a Yisrael. So we'll say, what's the halacha? Im yesh ba akeves yayin aser. If the funnel, Rabbi say, has what's called an akeves on the bottom of it, it's going to be aser. So we'll say, Rashi says, akeves is mayim shem is akeves sham tipa asen. So we'll say, essentially, Yakeves is like some type of lip at the bottom of the funnel, right? So we'll say, what happens if there's a lip there in Akeves? Ultimately, again, we're concerned that what? There's some Yayin Nesech got caught up in there, got stuck over there, and therefore when I subsequently put that into the utensil, or into the jug of the Jew, the jug of the wine of the Yisrael is going to get mixed in with the little droplets of Yayin Nesech. So the Gemara says, we'll say if I'm pouring from one utensil to another utensil, es she'ira mimenu mutter, that which you poured from is mutter, the es she'ira l'socha aser, and ultimately again, that which you poured into is going to be aser. We'll see in the Gemara what exactly that case is. But what we're going to start to say is a discussion about the funnel. So again, if I'm pouring wine from my barrel into the utensil of an akum, so what the Gemara says is, what the Mishnah says is as follows. If the funnel, and then I take that funnel and I use it to pour wine for a Jew, so we'll say, if that funnel has a lip on it, then what? Then the mice, again, the wine of the Jew will be aser. Says the Gemara, Tanan Hasam, Hanitzuk Vaketafros Umash Ketoveh, Enochibor Lo Lutuma, Velo Latara. So we'll say, we learned this, we've actually quoted this before. Nitzok means a flow. Rashi says over here, Nitzok, Kiluach Tzinor, Haba Milamala Lamata, Bezekifa Kimarze Shalgagin. So I'll say, so this is a flow, which flows from item A to item B. Or again, I will say, Kitafros. Rashi says, is Main Haba Milamala Lamata Derech Majron. This is liquid that flows via a slope. And Mashke Tofiach. And I will say, if you have liquid which is wet enough to be able to convey moisture to something else, all of these things, Enochibor, we'll say they do not create a connection, lo l'tuma, v'lo l'tara, neither for tuma purposes nor for tara purposes. Ha'ashboren, we'll say ashboren means if you have some type of cleft in the ground and liquid, right? Let's say water collects in there, chibor l'tuma l'tara. We'll say that is considered to be connected for tuma and tara purposes, which means that if somebody who was tame were to touch one part of that body of water, the entire body would become tame. Amar Avuna, so we'll say, so why is it important for us? Amar Avuna, Nitzuk viktafros umashe tofeach chibor the inyan yayin nesach. So we'll say, Rav Huna comes along and says, even though what you just said might be true for tuma purposes, It's not true for Yayin Nesach purposes. The Rebbe say ultimately again, and what we're going to focus on is the flow. A flow has the ability to connect two utensils for Yayin Nesach purposes. Amrali Rav Nachman Rav Huna Menalachah. So Rav Nachman said to Rav Huna, from where do you know this? From where do you know that ultimately again, a flow connects two utensils for Yayin Nesach purposes? So the Gemara says, Ilema Midisnan. If you want to say you learned it from the Mishnah we just quoted above, Hanitzuk Vakatafla Samash Ketofeh Inuchibra Lotumovalotaro. So if you want to learn from the Mishnah we just quoted, namely, that the Nitzuk, the Ketafris, and Mashketofeh do not create a connection for Tumah purposes, Lotumovalotaro Udul Havichibor, Hala Inyin Yayinesach Havichibor. Ultimately, again, what you're darshaning is, for Tumah and Taro there's no connection, but for Yayinesach there is. Well, that can't be so, because in Masefa, Ha'ashboren chibur l'tumah l'tara. So we'll say, what does it say at the end? The ashboren, which is the body of water in a cleft in the ground, that is considered to be connected for tumah l'tara purposes. You're going to darshan there l'tumah l'tara hu d'havi chibur l'inyin esech lo havi chibur. So we'll say that obviously wouldn't make sense. You're going to say it's only a chibur for tumah l'tara, but not a chibur for yayin esech. That can't be. So therefore, the diak is not good. Elo Meha leka lamashmina. You're right, rather, from this Mishnah we just quoted before, you can't learn anything about a nitzuk being chibur. So where does he learn it from? Tanan. Natala san mishpach umada lusoch tzluchiso sha'oviko chavim. The chazar umada da lusoch tzluchiso sheisos. We'll say, watch this. He just recorded our Mishnah. What did our Mishnah say? Rabbi say, I am a Jew. Baruch Hashem. And what happens? I'm selling wine to an akum. So what am I doing? I'm going ahead and I'm pouring my wine from my barrel into the jug of the akum. How am I doing that? Via a funnel. What does the Mishnah say? If the funnel has a lip on it, where there's a concern that there's going to be some yayin esef that gets caught up in the lip, if I then go ahead and take that same funnel and I use it to pour wine for a Jew, I'll say, what's the halacha? What's the halacha? The wine of the Jew is going to be aser. So the Gemara says as follows. Say im, amadezivo, say im. Im yesh bo akeves. So the Mishnah says in the use of this funnel, if the funnel has a lip, yayin aser. Ultimately, again, subsequently, when I pour wine for the Jewish wine is going to be aser. So we'll say, so says the Gemara, what's going on over here? How exactly does the wine caught up in the lip of the funnel become Yayin Nesach? We'll say, how is that becoming Yayin Nesach? So the Gemara says, Haya Keves Yayin B'mai Kamisra. We'll say, how does the wine caught up, that is caught up in the lip of the funnel, become Yayin Nesach? The Gemara says, Lav Benitzuk. We'll say, I'll tell you exactly how. We'll say, it's through the flow. But remember again, what we've established already is, how is it that when I pour wine, from my barrel into the utensil of the akum, but say, how does the wine of the utensil of the akum become yayin esach? How does it become yayin esach? Remember again, because we always make the assumption that what? That there are some residual leftover droplets of wine in the bottom of the kli. Because remember again, the jug of the akum could be sitting on the table. I'm pouring. The akum's nowhere in sight. Yet we know that as soon as the wine gets into his utensil, it becomes yayin esach. Why? Because you operate under the assumption that there are droplets of wine on the bottom of his utensil. So we'll say, so now watch this. So how does that impact the funnel? It must be that Rabbi say everything is becoming usher through nitzok. Through flow. In other words, that when I'm pouring from my barrel into the akum's barrel, so then what happens? The wine hits the droplets on the bottom of his barrel. That transforms the wine into yayin esach. We'll say, but what does that do? That doesn't only answer, that isra now goes back up. Nitzuk, a flow, creates a halachic connection, which means ultimately, again, the wine coming through the funnel is already usher even before it hits the bottom. That's why what? That's why halach lemais, again, even the droplets that are caught in the lip of the funnel are going to be usher as well. So the Gemara says, Shmamina nitzuk chibur. You see from here that a flow creates a connection. So the Gemara says, no. Tani Rav Chista. So Rav Chista comes along and says, Shepachasto tzluchiso. So ultimately, again, Moshe says what? Moshe, look at Rashi just a moment. Shepachasto tzluchiso. Vachi katani la. So the Gemara says, V'natla mishapech umadu lasok tzluchis sho'ove kochavim. Vachi pachasto tzluchiso. V'chazar umadu lasok tzluchis sha'yisrael. Emesh Rebosei, so the Gemara says, no. What's the case of Rebosei? The case over here is where halacha lemaisa, I filled up the jug of wine enough. I filled up the Akum's jug enough. That's what I will say. That lemaisa, the wine level goes above the bottom of the funnel. So we'll say, so this is not a din in slukas. We'll say, notice, if you can imagine, the funnel extends into the utensil of the Akum. The Kesur says, the Gemara is, I've filled up the jug enough, that's what? That the bottom of the funnel is beneath the wine surface. So it's submerged in the wine. So this is not an issue, ultimately, again, of Nitzok. This is not an issue of the flow being a connection. Rather, what's happening over here? This is an issue, ultimately, again, at the bottom of the funnel, Mamish coming in contact with Yayin Nesech itself. That's why, again, we are concerned that there are droplets, ultimately, again, in the lip, which is why if you use that same funnel to go ahead and measure out wine for Yisrael, the Yisrael's wine is going to become Aser. To which the Gemara says, "Balo pachas tutzlichis omai." But what happens again if you didn't submerge the funnel in the wine of the Akum, or be the Halacha? Lo. Well, it would appear that the halacha would be that the bottom of the funnel, that we would not be concerned that it has dropped. So also, the way we're setting it up over here is the only reason I'm concerned about droplets of Yayin Nesech in the lip of the funnel is why? Because the funnel itself was submerged in the wine in the utensil of the Akum. But it sounds like if the funnel was not submerged in the utensil of the wine of the Akum, then what? That would not be choshesh for Yayin Nesech droplets in the lip of the funnel. To which the Gemara says, well, tifshot tenitzok eno chibur. Well, so then I can learn out from that, that what? That a flow by itself does not create a chibur. That a flow by itself, we'll say from one utensil to another, does not create the connection between both of the utensils. To which the Gemara says, lo, pechazot luchisot tifshot lecha da'aser, nitzok tiboy. To which the Gemara says, we'll say, no. What I know for sure is as follows. So I know for sure is, here, let's start with what we know for sure. That if I'm a Jew, pouring my wine from my barrel into the utensil of the Akum, I'm doing so via a funnel. The funnel is inside the utensil, the Akum's utensil. I fill up the wine level high enough that what? That the bottom of the tents of the funnel is immersed inside, submerged inside the wine of the Akum. And then I take that same funnel and I use it to pour out wine of the Yisrael. The wine of the Yisrael is going to become Aser. Why? Why? Because there's a chashash, assuming that what? The funnel has a lip. Because there's a chashash that droplets of Yayin Nesech were stuck in the lip, and therefore again render the wine, the subsequent wine of the Yisrael is going to be Aser. That's the case I know. That's the case I know. What's the Safek case? What I don't know about say is Nitzok. What I don't know is what is the status of flow. Then when I have wine flowing from a utensil, from a funnel of a Jew, into what? Into the sluchis, into the jug of the Akum. And I have to be choshesh that there are droplets of Yayin Nesech wine on the bottom of the flask of the Akum. We'll say, does that flow create an Iser? So that the bottom of the flask should become Asra. We'll say, even if what? Even if it's never actively submerged beneath the surface of the wine of the Akum. To which the Gemara says, Tashma, Hama'ara Mikli Likli. So we'll listen to this. If he pour from one utensil to another utensil, as shema ara mimeno mutter, so I'll say the utensil you pour from is mutter. Ha de beni aser. But we'll say, what do you see from here? Look at Rashi. Hamaara mikli al kli sakadai to be Yisrael askina. So I'll say we're assuming ultimately again that's what it's a Jew pouring from his kli into the kli of an akum. So I'll say, so what do you see from here? The upper kli, the Yisrael's kli, is going to be mutter. But beni abaser, which means the flow will be aser. Shmamina nitzok chibur. Well, so what do you see from here? That a flow creates a connection between the flow and the utensil of destination. So Gemara says, but one second, that doesn't work. I nitzok chibur afilu digave demana namilitzer. We'll say, if you say that nitzok is chibur, we'll say, if you say that a flow creates a connection, we'll say, then where, how far back does that connection go? Should go back to the utensil of origin. Which also means if you say that Nitzok is Chibur, then what? Then we'll say what that means is if I'm pouring from my utensil into the utensil of an Akum, then again what you're saying is as soon as that flow hits the bottom of the utensil of the Akum, mixes in with droplets of the Yayin Nesech, then what? That should send the Isra Yayin Nesech, we'll say where? Where? Back to the utensil of origin, back to the Jew's utensil as well, which means that all of the liquid, all of the wine in the Jew's utensil should become Aser as well. Well, that's a pretty dramatic shita, to which the Gemara says, Halo Kasha, That's not a problem. Why? The kamaktif kitufe. We'll say, because what's the issue over here? Maktif kitufe, we'll say, means that literally he pours in spurts, which we'll say means as follows. You know, when you pour, you could pour in such a way, we'll say, where essentially, I don't know what the technical term is, but you pour like with a quick flick of the wrist. So what happens? Essentially, that liquid that comes out of Osai is what? It is detached from the utensil of origin before it gets ultimately into the kli. So Osai, so like that is something actually very interesting which happens, which is as follows. Which is now, even if you say nitzuk is chibor, even if you say ultimately that a flow creates a connection, as long as that flow is detached from the utensil of origin before it hits the utensil of destination, then even if you say the flow becomes usser, at most what's going to happen is the flow is usser, but it can have no negative impact on the utensil of origin. It's quite interesting. To which the Gemara says, Miko Makom, Mitzu Chibor. They will say, but bottom line, for our purposes, what we seem to be saying is that a flow creates a connection, that the flow itself creates a connection. And I will say, Tereinokinami, if you were to pour straight an unbroken flow from, let's say, the utensil of the Jew into the utensil of a non-Jew, then I will say, and there was droplets of the Ayinesach in the bottom of the utensil of the non-Jew, then I will say, what would be the halacha? Right? The flow would be usher, and what else would be usher? The Jew's wine in the original wine as well, which was is quite dramatic. But using that logic, Ema say, if also look at the end of the Mishnah, as she'ir lo so, look at the end of the Brisa, I should say, as she'ir lo so chohu da'asir. We'll say the Brisa said that the utensil which you are pouring into is asir. Ha de beni beni shari. We'll say, but yeah, you could infer from that it's only the liquid, or it's only the wine that comes to rest in the utensil of destination which becomes asir, but the flow itself is mutar. You're right. The truth is, you can't derive any kind of conclusions from the Mishnah we just quoted above. So Tashma, so we'll say, so again, understand we're still trying to resolve this. What is the status of flow? What is the status of flow? So Tashma, listen to this. So we'll say, if I'm pouring my wine from the chavis to a bar, I'm pouring it from, chavis is the barrel, into the bar. Also remember again, bar is the wine cistern. So I'm pouring it into the chavis of the bar. So what's the halacha? Kiluach hayorid misvas chavis lamata aser. So let's listen to this. So the flow that comes from the edge of the barrel, let's say, so this must be a case ultimately again, where I guess what we'll call it is the right. So, well, actually, let's explain the case first. So what do we say? Kiluach hayorid misvas chavis lamata. So the flow that comes from the edge of the barrel that flows down is going to be aser. So we'll say, so this seems to say what? This seems to say nitzok aser. We'll say, this is telling us that what? That a flow, in fact, creates a connection. Tirgim arav sheshes ba'obed kochavim. We'll say, no. First of all, what's the case over here? The case over says the Gemara is the case of an obed kochavim who responds. So we'll say, the case is the obed kochavim has a barrel of wine. He is pouring from his wine into what? Into my cistern. So we say, what's the halacha? So therefore, again, the Brisa just said that the wine now in my cistern is going to become aser. Why is that? Da'asi mikocho. Because ultimately, again, the wine, I will say, is coming from his koach. Because remember, again, we spoke about that, although the paradigmatic case of the Ayin Esach is Sheikh Sheikh, is where the Akum puts his hand in the wine and he moves it around for the sake of Avodah Zarah. We saw that Midirabban, I will say, even if what? Even if he pours the wine, and the wine is poured mikocho, ultimately, again, the wine is going to be aser. So I say, so this is a case of where the Ovid Kochavim is pouring from the barrel into my cistern. That wine is coming into my cistern mikocho, that's why it's going to be aser. I Ovid Kochavim ha-ma'are, afilu gavo dechavis anami mitzar. So we'll say, if that's the case, though, that the Ovid Kochavim is pouring, we'll say, then what? Then even remember, what did the Brisa say? The Brisa just said that only the wine that comes from where? From the lip of the barrel and on, right, is going to be usher. But if the Ovid Kochavim is pouring, we'll say, then what? Then why isn't the wine inside of the barrel itself usher as well? To which the Gemara says, we'll say, because at the end of the day, the fact that wine poured through the koach of an akum is going to be aser, that's midrabanan. When would the rabanan go there? So the Gemara says, koach tovi kochav midrabananu, the asir, hahu dinafak libray gazru be rabanan. We'll say the rabbis were only gozer on the koach when it comes out of the barrel, but they were not gozer from the koach that comes inside. They were not gozer. Say it differently. We'll say, let's take a step back. Real yayin nesech requires active agitation of the wine by the akum. Right? We added on to this that what? That if the akum pours the wine, that should become asra as well, mi kocho. The rabbanon were only gozer on kocho, which wine are both saying? On the wine that comes out of the utensil. But we're not gozer on the wine which remains inside of the utensil. Therefore, I will say, in this case over here, where the akum is going ahead and pouring from his barrel of wine into my cistern, only the wine that comes out of the barrel will be asra atziyayin esech, but the wine which remains inside will not be asra. So the Gemara says, Amaluhu Rav Chista lahano sabisa. So we'll say, ultimately, again, Rav Chista said, we'll say, sabisa are wine merchants. Rav Chista said to some of the wine merchants, ki kailisu chamra la'ovdi kochavim, Katufi. So inami naftzi nafutze. We'll listen to this. So Rav Chisti used to say to the wine merchants, when you are selling wine to an akum, here's what you should do. When pouring it, you should pour it in spurts. Pour it in spurts. And I was going to say, what was he saying to them? What was Rav Chisti saying to them? Make sure there's never an unbroken flow from your barrel to their utensil. Because we'll say, if that happens, then what? Then the ma'aseh again, you're going to have a problem of nitzuk chibur. So instead, what should you do? He gives them two possibilities. Katufi, we'll say, means pour it in spurts. What does it mean, pour it in spurts? Pour it in a way where the flow is detached from the utensil of origin, from your utensil. Now this other part, I don't exactly understand how it works, but natzufi, means literally throw the wine. Rashi says, yamdu me'rachok, the Yizriku Hayayin Lakela. So you stand at a distance. I guess you take your barrel and you go and you go like this. So you go and I guess you're not so worried about waste in that type of situation, but whatever it is, that's what you do. Amrulu Rav Lahano Shavchai. Was it ultimately Rav said to these Shavchai? Was it so Rashi says, Shavchai are Paul in Yisrael, Haregilim La'aros Yayin, Mikli Akli. These are people will say, these are pourers. Jewish pourers, right? Kishafachisu chamra, when you go out and you pour wine, lo likrav ovdei kochav mesai ba'adaychu. Do not go ahead and allow an akum to help you in the pouring of the wine. Why? Dilma mashtilu, because maybe you'll get tired, right? Vishadisu le'i'alei v'ka'asi mikocho da'asar. Maybe you'll get tired. The akum will end up pouring it, and I will say, what will happen? Ultimately, again, the akum will end up pouring the wine. I will say, as you just said before, if the akum ends up pouring the wine, then what's Rabbi saying? Then halacha lemaisa, what's going to end up happening? We just said before that any wine that is poured through the koach of the akum, the wine that comes out of the utensil, ultimately, again, is going to be usher because it's coming alt kocho. So we'll say, so I'll tell you something interesting. I just want to mention this just before we run out of time. So the Gemara just says something quite fascinating, which is we already established before that any wine that is poured alt the koach of the akum, Rabosai, is going to be usher. Right? Any wine that's poured out kocho, that is poured through his koach going to usher. Which we'll say is our content, this is where cases for us come up with yayin esek, or stam yayin. We'll say, right, that if a non-Jew goes ahead and what? Pours the wine is going to be usher. Now we'll say, the Gemara makes it sound like, however, that the isser is only on what? On the wine which comes out, but not on the wine which remains inside the bottles. Listen to this. So the Shulchan Aruch Bozai says as follows, Natal obe kocham kli shal yayin. If the Akum goes ahead and picks up a utensil of wine, v'gbiu v'yatza yayin, he lifts it up and the wine comes out, afal pish lo shech shech, even though he did not touch the wine, right? He did not agitate the wine, ne'esar b'shtia, the wine is asar b'shtia, shahari hayayin b'amikocho. Because we'll say the wine was poured because of his koach. So now understand, here's what's fascinating. But we'll say that which is usher left inside the bottle is going to be usher as well. Why? Mishum nitzuk. We'll say ultimately again, because it is connected through the flow. But we'll say, see why it's something fascinating? This is an issue of reverse flow. So we'll say what this means is as follows. The Akum picks up my bottle of wine, he pours it. That which he pours is going to be usher. Why? Because we'll say that's why? Why? Kocho. Now what we're saying is, now that that kocho is aser, that which is left inside the bottle is also going to be aser. Why? Because that which is inside the bottle is connected alf nitzuch through the flow to that which is coming outside of us. So this is a reverse flow issue. So again, that which is left in the bottle is going to be aser because it's connected to the flow coming out of the bottle. The flow coming out of the bottle will say is aser alz kocho, and that which is left inside the bottle is aser alz nitzuk havi chibur. We'll say, why is this important? Because this is the case that comes up contemporarily for us. All of Yayin Nesach cases are both, like, pretty much for us, contemporary, boil down to this case. I have a bottle of non-Mavushal wine that is touched by a non-Jew. The non-Jew part of Mosai, so we'll see, interestingly enough, we'll see this doesn't talk about touching, right? But again, if at the end of the day, this is Higbio, he picks it up. Once the Akum picks it up, then what, Rabosai? The wine itself is usser. The wine itself is usser. Once he pours it, now here's what's interesting. The case over here is Vigbio Vyatsayain. He's talking about a case over here of pouring. So we'll discuss what happens if there's no pouring. There's just lifting. But at least in a case of pouring, we see ultimately, again, that which comes out of the bottle is going to be aser alz kocho, and that which remains inside the bottle will be aser alz nitzuk. All right, so stop over here for today. We'll pick up a minute with the rest of the schema tomorrow. Correct. Why is that connected?